This is Tactical Advantage with John Register, presented by Mount Carmel Veteran Service Center in partnership with Medicare Mentors, Wirenut Home Services, and Star Dental Institute. Tactical Advantage brings news, information, and resources to military-connected people of color throughout the Pikes Peak region. Now, here's your host, John Register.
Hey, great Saturday morning, everybody. Another day of learning awakes us all. Welcome to the Tactical Advantage. My name is John Register, Paralympic silver medalist, combat veteran, and change mindset warrior, and I am honored to be your host. So get that cup of joe, everybody. We're ready to go, and I hope you're ready to start your day. First, I really have to thank Mount Carmel Veteran Service Center, who provides this service to us each week. So Tactical Advantage is brought to you by Wirenut Home Services, Star Dental Institute, and Medicare Mentors. We have another great show lined up for you today, and we have some great guests. Stacy Burns, co-founder and chief impact officer, Colorado Institute for Social Impact. Colonel Bob McLaughlin, U.S. Army retired and chief operating officer for Mount Carmel Veteran Services. And Terrence McWilliams, senior vice president of military affairs, El Pomar Foundation, and board manager, Mount Carmel Veteran Service Center. Please follow us on the Podbean podcasting platform for all our archive shows. You're going to get this one pretty soon as well. And follow me by visiting my website, johnregister.com, and selecting your preferred way to connect on social media, the top right portion of the page. Tactical Advantage is about to start right now. Hey, what's going on, everybody? We are with Stacy Burns on the Tactical Advantage. Thank you for being in the show.
Thank you for having me.
So she is the co-founder and chief impact officer of the Colorado Institute for Social Impact. What is that all about?
So my co-founder and I founded this organization about 4 years ago when folks in the community knew that he and I had both done kind of business with a mission for the previous 15 years. And we have more and more folks in our community that really want to do business with that heart, and or maybe do heart with a little more business for nonprofits. And so we started an organization to support educating and bringing those folks together and then helping them measure that impact.
Is that like corporate social responsibility? Is that kind of...
It is. It's just on steroids. So okay. It kind of takes it that next step further. So CSR ends up kind of being more of a marketing effort for a lot of organizations, whereas social impact is truly built into the DNA of the business.
So help me understand a little bit more, and our audience understand, you know, kind of the mission that you really are trying to get after.
Yeah, so we are a 501c3, so our mission is truly to help educate folks that want to participate in this sector. That's everything from consumers to funders to businesses to nonprofit leaders, entrepreneurs, folks in that space. And then through that, we're a social enterprise ourselves, so our business lines are consulting, evaluation through social return on investment, and then also we do a certification for entrepreneurs.
Oh, that's cool. I'm an entrepreneur.
Nice.
Can I get a certification?
Come join us. Yes, of course. Please join us. We'd love to have you.
I may take you up on that.
Please do.
But you're working with both nonprofits and for-profits. So is there a difference between the two and the services that you provide?
We are. So there's an interesting meeting in the middle right now. So nonprofits are realizing they need more sustainable revenue, and that especially during times like 2020, where funding gets shifted to other places like safety and security, maybe I can't rely on the funding that I could the year before. And so a business model can help them really take more charge of their own future and direct that a little more specifically. And then for-profits, really since 2008, we've seen a really strong trend of, you know what, Wall Street's in it for Wall Street. Mm-hmm. We want to focus on the businesses that are going to do right by Main Street. And so we're going to focus on community. We're going to focus on the folks that, and buy from the folks, services and products that are doing good in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a lot of small business and large for-profit trends toward having more than just, I donate my $1,000 for a sponsorship every year. Yeah. It's more than that. It's, you know, we have a volunteer program where we treat our employees well. We, you know, we look to actually support nonprofits in a meaningful way as opposed to just kind of throwing money at things.
Yeah. So why do you think that is? Why are companies now starting to trend in that direction?
So the economic downturn, you had families, you had people losing their jobs, yeah. so they now needed more safety net services. Mm-hmm. The nonprofits were ready to meet that need, but then the funders had their money in the same Wall Street everybody else did. And so you see this tightening of resources. And then you see families that do still have a certain amount of income, but they don't have as much expendable income, or they're wanting to hold on to that mm-hmm. a little bit more, so they want their money to go further. And so if I can buy a product or a service that gets me what I needed anyway, whether it's a pair of shoes or mentoring, whatever the case may be, and I can help somebody else at the same time, my money just went further and I got what I needed. And so you saw that trend really start. It really, really grew last year. So you see COVID hit, you see a lot of people losing their jobs, you see people hurting, needing those safety net services again. And we heard about the companies that weren't doing right by their employees, that were putting them in danger, or, you know, maybe that health benefit wasn't what they thought it was, things yeah. like that. And so you really start to see that glass door get even more transparent about, oh, we need to take better care of our people, or we're going to get called out for it. And then nonprofits being in the same boat again of, you know, how do I make sure that as a leadership organization that's not providing food and shelter, mm-hmm. how do I make sure that I have a future in my community? And this is important as well. It's just not the pressing issue of the day. And so I think a lot of economic factors really influence that. You also have very young generations. So our millennials, but now our Gen Z, who mm-hmm. are consumers out in the marketplace sure. up to 21, they only want to shop this way. 90% of Gen Z population says, I want to only shop for things that have a purpose and that have a stronger impact yeah. in my community.
I've noticed that. I've seen they're out of there. If they think that you are being a disingenuous or something, they are gone quick.
Yep. And they'll tell their friends about it and all over social media.
You'll blow up.
Yes, in the wrong way. Exactly.
So you mentioned COVID, right? And so yeah. a lot of things began to happen. You know, we saw a lot more online things were happening. Christmas by Amazon, all the time was happening. Yes. Talk about kind of the return, the shift back, as we're starting to see maybe light in the tunnel from the pandemic, and how you think that might, you know, forecast it a little bit for us on what you might see in trends that way.
So I think that folks are going to continue to be cautious mm-hmm. about their spending. I think that, you know, coming out of this, folks are not, we have a wonderful community here. And so we see a lot of folks out in the restaurants. But I think it's going to take the general population a while to come back from that. And so I think that gives our businesses and nonprofits some time to really look at, how do I shift and pivot in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. What worked last year, because I couldn't sit down across from a funder, across from a table,
right.
and influence them in the way that I could the year before. And as a for-profit, that style of marketing, everybody had to change their marketing tactics last year, right? And so all of these things, I think a lot of folks are going to be looking back at, what do I keep from 2019? And what did I pivot in 2020 that worked and didn't work? And mm-hmm. how do I build this new, that's really where this new sector is coming from. How do I keep both of those? Red Gravy's a great example of a local business mm-hmm. that pivoted to feed healthcare workers. And at the same time, Chef Eric Brenner wanted to keep his employees hired and working, and so he found a beautiful blend through business and mission. So
wow.
hopefully we see some of that continue as well.
Yeah, I think we are going to see what in my area of, you know, professional speaking, the kind of the hybrid environment, where we'll keep some remnants of the what we learned, or at least we hope to, right?
Yeah.
I think the models will adjust for that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Stacy Burns, co-founder of and Chief Impact Officer, Colorado Institute for Social Impact. Shifting gears a little bit, you like water skiing.
I do.
You're in Colorado.
I know. Not in Michigan.
You're not. Where, yes. Are you finding, like?
So I grew up in a little valley that's right on the southern border of the state.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a lake called Navajo Lake that
okay.
it's got a little itty bitty footprint in Colorado, and most of it's in New Mexico. But it's, I shouldn't tell people this because then it'll just get crowded, but it's the most amazing lake that I've ever been on, because it has all of these little inlets and the water gets just like glass, and then you get your rooster tail going off your back ski.
Yeah.
And
Rooster tails. Awesome. So what's a rooster tail? I know what that is.
But, so on a slalom ski, there's the one fin, mm-hmm. And the more you dig in, so if you lean on your back foot, you get a nice little spray of water spray, coming off the back. And my dad always called that a rooster tail.
So. So go by the dock and spray the people on the.
I don't do that. You don't do that? Maybe. Maybe my little sister.
Yeah. It's not you.
No.
Okay. All right. And then it says, you know, I love this. You hate statistics, but love analysis.
Yes.
You just confused me and made my head hurt.
I know. So I had to take statistics both in undergrad and graduate school. Almost failed it both times. It is just not, that's not how my brain works. It's not how this, and so it's funny, these turns that life takes. And so now what I do with social return on investment is actually look at statistics and look at the likelihood of things to happen, or the data and how that's telling a story. So I don't use z-tests and t-tests, and I don't remember all the stuff, but the thing that I do love is finding the little kind of threads that weave together these amazing organizations and being able to put a dollars and cents value to that that then helps them go tell their story in a more meaningful way.
So it seems that is, you're using that as a It's good because it's helping in the business now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So when you talk about social impact, we talked about the community or the corporate social responsibility piece of it. Can you explain kind of the fourth sector? You have this fourth sector mentality. So what's that about?
Yeah, so we've had these three sectors of our economy for a very long time, right? We've got public government, we've got private, which is typically for-profits, and then you've got what previously was the third sector and now has been renamed the plural sector by Stanford, which includes NGOs, education, things like that. And so this fourth sector, Harvard Business Review actually had an article back in 2011 saying that this sector was going to change the future of capitalism. And we're seeing that every day now. And so as you see these businesses really start to pay more attention, a great example, a great differentiation between CSR and kind of the social impact is previously with CSR, Black Lives Matter was a tagline that you put at the top of your website and say, oh yeah, they matter. It's not integrated in your hiring practices. It doesn't change your promotion schedule. It's not something that you change how you support the community. And then you've got Pride Month now, and yesterday everybody lit up their websites with all the rainbow things. But social impact takes that a step further, and the fourth sector is where it's being embraced, is how do we actually live that every day, 365 days a year, not for a day, not for a month, that's being highlighted. How do we actually change people's lives with how we support the things that are aligned with our beliefs? And you don't have to have an opinion about everything. You don't have to have a message about everything, but find the things that are important to you and make them part of why you do what you do.
So I'm interested in that because a lot of times we see, and you brought up BLM, and a lot of folks want to put a tagline on it, as you said. And it really, to me, it comes down to a sense of belonging. You know, does this really matter to the values that we have to create a sense of belonging? Because we saw, and even with the murder of George Floyd, we saw diversity, equity, and inclusion there. We just didn't see belonging. We didn't see value.
Yeah.
And that's what was missing. How is your company business, you know, really trying to create those impacts and make people, you know, like leadership see it?
So we have a business owner, a social entrepreneur in our community that we reached out to, knowing that he would be affected by all of these different stories that are just horrific. And so when we spoke with him in the community and said, what can we do? How do we continue to support making sure that there is that belonging? He very generously responded, you're already doing it. You're giving all entrepreneurs and all people that want to do good with a business model a seat at the table. We're creating a space where you don't have to have all the money in the world to make you know, to be the most successful business person, you need to have a heart for your community and you need to have a solid business model. And if you can kind of start with those two things, we will help you get down the road with that.
Yeah. I really began looking deeper, not just on this piece of it, but in my own company of Inspire Communications International. How do we stay true on the values that we have and dig deeper into those instead of going really broad, go really, really deeper niched into those areas? So you're talking about the nonprofits. How many nonprofits and for-profit companies has Colorado Institute for Social Impact studied?
Studied, we're probably at around 25.
Okay.
These studies take a decent amount of time, and we're still pretty young, but we've got some really incredible folks that have signed on with us. In our young age, I'm always very excited when folks are like, yeah, that makes sense. Yes, it does. Thank you. So, yeah.
And then you mentioned earlier the classes. You know, what are some of those classes that, like entrepreneurship class, that I could jump into?
Of course. So we do an intro to social impact once a month. Mm-hmm. That's completely free. We've always kept those free. We've served over thousands of people that have come through those classes or one-on-one meetings and things like that. So we try to lower the barrier of folks that want to learn more about what this is or why they might be interested in it. And then we kind of, over time, have shifted weekly classes to doing this certification, where it's kind of more of a three-day boot camp model, where let's really workshop a business model. Let's really talk about starting with your why. How do you market a social impact business? And what are the ethics of social impact? Because as we're forming this new sector, we've seen ethical challenges in the sectors that have come before us. How do we actually make this different? How do we go into this purposefully to build a solid set of ethics before we get more mature and down the road?
So what are some of those? I'm interested now with that social ethics. I mean, it seems like people are coming in here for the right reasons to try to do that. So what are some of the challenges that you're experiencing?
So a really great example, and unfortunately they've become a prime example for a lot of things, but Tom's Shoes. Mm-hmm. So Blake Mikoski, the founder, he founded the one-for-one model, what are we going on, 20 years, probably 15 years ago, buy a pair of shoes and we will donate, give away a pair of shoes to a kiddo because they were dying in developing countries from ingesting toxins into their feet because they couldn't keep shoes on their feet because they were growing out of them or their parents couldn't afford them, whatever the case may be. Gave away hundreds, millions of shoes. And so what happened was, without thinking through what the potential unintended consequences of that were, Tom's Shoes actually put out of business local shoe cobblers and local shoe manufacturers. Yeah. Gotcha. So these developing countries that already had economic challenges, we've now eliminated a whole other sector of their economy because we had good intentions but didn't think through unintended consequences. And so they have shifted their model. They're building more factories in those countries now. They've shifted the giving model altogether now. But without those things and without thinking through those things, and I think ethics has a lot of gray and is a conversation, not necessarily me dictating what that is, but we have a lot of conversations about different organizations that have come before us and how do we all see this differently? And how do we, when the news crew is standing in front of us, how do we justify the choice that we made for the good that we were trying to do?
Yeah, I when you're saying that, I was thinking about the T-shirt example, right? So we, whatever team wins the Super Bowl, the team that loses, there's a whole bunch of T-shirts that wind up over in Cambodia or someplace else.
Yes, Africa.
And those, that industry is kind of wiped out because the people that were selling T-shirts over there now just have an influx of free T-shirts and we haven't thought through all the way through it.
Or a beautiful textile industry that no longer exists because people would rather have the Nike shirt with a stain on it than they would have this beautiful, vibrant, you know, shirt made up the road.
Right.
So
yeah,
we have to consider what are the potential chances that we're going to do more harm than good or do any harm. How do we ask those questions?
And how do people find you?
So they're welcome to call the Institute. We have a website, ciforsi.org. And my contact information is on there. I'm usually the one that responds to any of the questions.
Is that CI for four, the letter, the number four?
Number four, yes.
Okay.
So CI number four.
CI4SI.org. All right, awesome. We've been talking with Stacey Burns, co-founder and chief impact officer, Colorado Institute for Social Impact. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, John, for having me.
Absolutely. And we'll be back right after this on the Tactical Advantage.
Stay tuned for more valuable information on Tactical Advantage on KPPF.
It's time to smile again. At Star Dental Institute, Dr. Gary Moore and his staff specialize in general dentistry, dentures, and orthodontics, as well as sedation dentistry and dental implants at affordable rates. With COVID-19 restrictions being lifted, now is the perfect time to visit Star Dental Institute, Colorado Springs' premier full-service dentistry office and one-day denture service center. The message is basic. It's safe to come back to the dentist. To schedule an appointment, call 719-597-7979 or online at dentalcoloradosprings.com. Star Dental Institute, proud sponsor of Tactical Advantage.
Now, back to Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Tactical Advantage. I am in studio with, once again, a returnee, a veteran returnee. He re-upped, everybody. He re-upped Colonel Bob McLaughlin, U.S. Army retired, the chief operating officer over at Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Thanks again, Colonel McLaughlin, for being back over here.
John, a pleasure to be here. Glad to be on board with you again. This is fantastic.
So you've been supporting the show, and I really appreciate that. So, okay. First question, how's it going? Are you hearing the shows? Are they good? Are they
good? Really good. Getting good feedback. We're really enthusiastic. And, of course, to have you, local celebrity, making this happen is great.
Well, I'm thankful to be actually doing this. So I appreciate I got to make sure that the boss is satisfied.
I'll ask him.
All right. So talk a little bit about the mission of Mount Carmel.
So, I mean, quite literally, we're here to make sure we're filling in any gaps in the transition of military members and veterans. Four real core competencies. The first is what we call greet and connect. That's making sure that we are reaching anyone who needs assistance. We're building partnerships, and we're working with people that want to support us, and that's greet and connect. Mm-hmm. And then when we started Mount Carmel, it was all about supportive services. We built it with the idea, in my experiences, of what Army Community Services did for family members. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that once someone transitions out of the military, you know, the family doesn't have those services. And to create a place where we can counsel kids, counsel veterans, and spouses on educational opportunities, legal assistance if needed, housing assistance if needed, and of course benefits assistance, and financial assistance and counseling. All that stuff is normally critical during transition. So that's supportive services. And then transition and employment. Everybody who's leaving the military wants to make sure that they continue to put food on the table for their families, and that they can get meaningful employment. Mm-hmm. So to be able to transition military leadership into what they're going to do for the rest of their lives in the civilian world is tremendously important. Very challenging time for anyone transitioning out of the military, whether it's 4 years, 10 years, or 20 years. The Mount Carmel mission is to help with the transition, make it easier, be able to circle around people with various events where they can meet meet employers, talk to other veterans who have been there. So we're proud of that. And then the last piece is behavioral health counseling. We want to make sure that if someone needs assistance, that assistance is there in a timely manner. We have many partners in the community that we're able to refer to for more detailed, maybe psychiatry or maybe addiction therapy that complement our talk therapy. And we have alternative therapies as well, equine therapy, art therapy, yoga, tai chi. We want to make sure that whatever somebody needs to keep them strong and resilient, because we all learn that in the military, that it's needed during transition and, you know, for the rest of your life as a veteran to be balanced.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier with Stacey Burns, who's over, co-founder, the chief impact officer over at Colorado Institute for Social Impact. And, you know, one of the things she was really talking about was the corporate social responsibility, but also kind of going deeper into making sure that some of those what we're doing is creating great, belonging in the community, right? And so you, Mount Carmel, honored to be recognized and recommended as one of the nonprofits by the Colorado Institute for Social Impact. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, it's fantastic. I've known Jonathan and Stacy for years. As a matter of fact, in their previous life, when they worked for Aspen Point, they owned the Peer Navigator program. So the program that's been at Mount Carmel for 5 years was originally with Aspen Point. Jonathan and Stacy partnered with me when I was on Fort Carson to help with troops in transition 10 years ago. And then they had an opportunity to turn that program over to me. We've been running with it with the help from the Coors Foundation for 5 years. It's awesome. When Jonathan and Stacy both moved to the Better Business Bureau and started the foundation 5 years ago, which became the Colorado Institute for Social Impact, they invited me to be on the board. So I've been working with them for years. And then we mutually agreed, hey, let's do a pilot and have a study on Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. So we commissioned the study in the summer. The study was complete in January timeframe, and it's a great outcome. It basically shows that as a nonprofit, the social return on investment from those programs that I just talked about at Mount Carmel is a 2-to-1 ratio. Mm. So the value of, if you want to put it into dollars,
sure,
the value of $1 coming into Mount Carmel is equal to $2 going out to the community in social impact. And that's everything from preventing homelessness to suicide prevention to preventing safety or accidents through travel because it's easier to get to our place. So we're proud of it. We think it's a great partnership. We think what Jonathan and Stacy are doing at the Institute is fantastic work. It's becoming the cultural norm, especially for young Americans. They want to know, for any company, whether it's profit or nonprofit, what are you doing other than making money? Mm-hmm. What are you giving back to the community?
Yeah.
So we're proud to have this study done, and this result we're very proud of.
You know, it's interesting you say that you met them over, you know, Jonathan and Stacy, when you're working as commander on Fort Carson. And so with that going on, with them being over Aspen Point, how important is it to have these public-private partnerships in order to get work done?
Incredibly important. I learned it when I was, in uniform, that working with any community is critical, because there's so many things in the community that are assets for military families. 70% of the military families in this region live off the military installation. Mm-hmm. And to be able to have access to services in the community is critical. And then, of course, as I was starting Mount Carmel, the Secretary of Defense in 2013 put out a memo nationwide that said, look, we're going to create a crisis with prolonged conflict that DOD and VA can't handle alone. We need private organizations to step up and help. It was kind of a call to action for me and Mr. Cimino to say, look, we're going to do the right thing at the right time. So public-private partnerships are critical. Look at 2020. More important than ever that public dollars that came down through COVID relief were able to be filtered through organizations like Mount Carmel that were agile to get rent assistance to the people who needed it, to do food assistance to the people who needed it. My hope is this is the trend for the future. Public-private partnerships will get stronger. People will realize the goodness. The social return on investment study shows the goodness of the importance of how dollars can double in our case. So it's critical whether you're serving or whether you're in a nonprofit like Mount Carmel.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Colonel Bob McLaughlin, U.S. Army retired Chief Operating Officer over at Mount Carmel Veteran Services Center right here in Colorado Springs. Okay, so I want to kind of shift gears just a little bit. I'm always doing this now because I want to learn more about, for the audience to know more about the people we're talking to. And you are a Boston Marathon 1995. Yep. Did you finish it?
Yeah, I did. My one and only marathon.
Oh my gosh.
It was to do Boston.
Did you hear that, everybody? Boston. You got Boston in there.
And we have the Bruins and the Celtics in the playoffs. I'm still a Denver fan of all sports. But to be able to, you know, those people who are athletically inclined are still involved in things. The Boston Marathon's in many cases a once in a lifetime. But to be able to be in that community, have the opportunity to do that, it was fantastic.
So and you're also a rugby player. Are you trying out for the All Blacks or for the New Zealand team?
I probably have to gain 50 pounds. And as a matter of fact, I've connected with some great people from the rugby club in Colorado Springs recently. Anyone who's into rugby, fantastic sport, both socially and on the pitch. I played for about 10 years, both in college at the University of Massachusetts and in the Army. I learned a lot playing rugby that applies to my military career. There's a saying that the Battle of Waterloo was won on the fields of Eton, referring to the defeat of Napoleon, that basically all the leaders on the British side, you know, learned their discipline on the rugby pitch that allowed them to be successful in the battlefield. I believe that in all endeavors. I think sport and training is important. You know this from your experience in anything in life. So I think being able to do the Boston Marathon and play competitive sports has helped me throughout my career and still does.
So, you know, one of the things I was I was really proud of it after it happened. I wasn't so much in agreement when it first was going on with it, and that was WCAP. So WCAP moving over to Fort Carson, Colorado. The reason I say that is because I didn't understand that they were trying to build tenant units onto Fort Carson to kind of keep it going. Because I had these athletes that were amazing, incredible folks, and I wanted to get them into Alamosa and all the other places because I knew that's where the best training was for them. So talk a little bit about athletics and, you know, and what some of the lessons that you learned that you still use right now to help, you know, drive your leadership and your team.
Absolutely. First, a little bit about WCAP. When we went through sequestration as an Army, people were looking at, you know, is it mission critical? And if you really look at it at face value, it, you know, taxpayers pay us to fight and win the nation's wars. And I argued at the time that, you know, to have a program like this that builds unity for people who are athletes is important because it's their passion, they're in the military, it connects us to the community across the country and in the world. So, I mean, WCAP program is still around and a very good program because it connects athletics to the military. And you were there. You've seen the athletes and how much they give back while they're serving and afterwards. But for me, from high school forward, to be part of, you know, the Army and all military branches value teamwork. They value hard work and discipline, and sport, whether it's an individual sport or team sport, teaches all of that. I would venture to say that most successful people in our military have some kind of athletic background. You know, the on the fields of friendly strife, you know the poem, but that's critical. I'm a big believer in it.
So I was a WCAP athlete, then on WCAP staff, and then helped to put para athletes in, which I thought was like even more. And I couldn't believe that the military actually allowed that to happen to keep those individuals that had suffered from either combat or outside of combat and had some injuries, that they were able to stay in the military to continue to do sport. And so we've seen now we have the Olympic and Paralympic Museum here, and I see a lot of those individuals that came through those programs on the wall, right, at the Olympic and Paralympic Museum. So it's kind of switching back and going back to the study, right, and trying to tie this together. Is you talked a little bit about, you know, you ordered, kind of requested this independent study, but what was kind of the process that you had to go through so anybody else that's listening to this kind of understands the sequence?
From my experience, I recommend any organization, profit or nonprofit, connect with the National Institute because they do a very – and they're expert at this. You talk to Stacy, it's her passion. they're expert in looking at the metrics for any organization of, you know, what is the cost savings, the benefits to the community of what you're doing, whether you're in a profit or nonprofit organization. For us, I wanted to really look at every day my staff and I go to work trying to help people, mm-hmm. right? And we believe, you know, obviously speaking of sports, you've watched The Field of Dreams, right?
Yeah.
With Kevin Costner. Build it and they will come. And they did. So my philosophy with Mount Carmel is build it and they will come. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of science involved. I knew the problem set. I understood 6 years ago that if we had a place that would make it easier for transitioning service members and veterans to get services outside of the military installation, that we would be successful. But there were no metrics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So getting the study done brings an outside organization to look at what the impact is. You know, going from good to great, and there's books about this, it's all about assessment. And mm-hmm. if you don't have somebody from the outside looking at you, it's just your thoughts. So to me, this is a validation of what we're doing is the right thing. You know, I'm also big on making sure that the National Institute is a trusted organization. Mm-hmm. If they're going to validate us, people need to trust them.
Sure.
So it's a kind of a twofer for me.
So you talked a little bit about the social return on investment and kind of how it aligns with Mount Carmel's strategic plan. When you look into the kind of down the crystal ball into returning from COVID, kind of light at the end of the tunnel, do you see another assessment coming? You know, how do you put that into a longer term vision?
Absolutely. We have to look at what's going to happen next, mm-hmm. right? You know, in our nation right now, there's been a lot of stimulus dollars given to people that mm-hmm. that don't want to work because they're getting their checks. This is going to become a problem. And what I always tell people, if you look at, you know, the return on investment, you're going to be okay today, but you got to get out in the workforce because you're going to lose out because mm-hmm. it's going to become a crisis in 6 months when you're not getting the check if you don't get back out into the productive workforce. So mm-hmm. for us, it's about the immediate help for people who need it this year. That's food assistance, rent assistance. And then moving forward, once people are back out into the workforce and have the means to support themselves, we want to be there to continue their growth. Do they need more counseling? Do they need to build their families strong? Or are people suffering from the impacts of COVID? We know in this community that housing is a challenge. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking at how do we work with organizations to do affordable housing? How do we work to do transitional housing? And then, of course, there's mental and physical health. We want to make sure that we're connected so people are taking care of themselves moving into the future.
So we're talking with Colonel Bob McLaughlin. In the kind of few minutes we have here left, you're talking about greet and connect, supportive services that you have, transition and employment, behavior health counseling. What else is do you think is needed for the community?
I'm clearly moving forward. It's going to be more in the housing realm, mm-hmm. right? We believe at Mount Carmel we have the right recipe to help people with those services. It's going to be a challenge for affordable housing, and we're constantly working on what options are for people in that arena. I believe that physical wellness is going to be important. People need to stay strong moving forward, and we're continually trying to build partnerships in that arena, because you can have all the success in the world, but if you're not physically well and taking care of yourself, mm-hmm. you're going to be in a troubled state. So we want to work with our vets to make sure that they're getting over the challenges that they might have felt in the last year. We want to expand our reach, where I've been meeting with the leadership in Pueblo for the last 2 months to talk about giving more assistance to rural Coloradans. We're going to establish a presence in Trinidad too, so Southern Colorado and the veterans that have served get the assistance that they need. Just like building Mount Carmel, I knew that vets in this region, 120,000 almost in Pueblo and Teller County, moving south to Pueblo County in Alamosa, there's probably another close to 80,000 spread throughout the South, we want to make sure that we're helping them as well.
Mm-hmm. So once again, we've been talking with Colonel Bob McLaughlin. Thank you. Well, before I close, how do people find your services?
So you can call us, 772-7000, 719-772-7000. I'm always willing for visitors to come and check us out, to give a tour at 5:30 Communication Circle.
I thought you meant 5:30 in the morning. I was going to be like, dark 30, that ended for me.
I'll be ready then, too, if I need it. So 5:30, the address, 5:30 Communication Circle, or visit the web at veteranscenter.org.
Awesome. Colonel Bob McLaughlin, U.S. Army retired HUA, Chief Operating Officer of Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Thank you so much for returning and being back on the show.
John, a pleasure. Thanks for doing this. It's great.
And we'll be back with more Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Stay tuned for more valuable information on Tactical Advantage on KPPF.
If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage to make sure that you have the right options. Call Rich Lewis at Medicare Mentors at 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance at no cost consultation for military connected service members. Committed to advocate for you today and all of your tomorrows. Proud sponsors of Tactical Advantage. Heard every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on KPPF.
Now, back to Tactical Advantage with John Register.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Tactical Advantage. We are in studio with Terrence McWilliams, Senior Vice President of Military Affairs, El Pomar Foundation, and Board of Managers, Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, that's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, I don't know you as all this big title here. I know you as Sergeant Major, yes. Over Fort Carson.
That's right.
You know, you were Sergeant Major for how many years? I mean, that was your last post, wasn't it?
Yeah, Fort Carson was my last duty assignment.
And what was the kind of legacy that you left over there?
Well, that's a good question. What was my legacy? I mean, every time I go out there, everybody still knows me. And
yeah.
I still run the place.
Yeah. they should, because you still do run the place. Everybody's always calling upon you.
But I think I left a legacy of truly taking care of soldiers.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly taking care of soldiers, you know.
I would definitely say that. You know, one of the things that I most appreciate, you know, we first met, was when I was building out the Paralympic military sport program.
That's right.
And we took on, and you opened up the post for those injured veterans to have the first ever military sport camp that was here in Colorado.
Absolutely.
Springs, that turned to Warrior Games, turned to Prince Harry's Invictus Games. So I just want to thank you personally opening up the doors to Fort Carson.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So share a little bit about your military career and then kind of the transition over to Mount Carmel.
Well, I did 31 years in the Army,
mm-hmm.
and I was combat arms, you know, served in the Persian Gulf War, Iraq, Afghanistan. I was kind of like a dinosaur because I was a sergeant major for 14 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yes. And Fort Carson was my third post that I was the sergeant major of.
Wow. And so now you've kind of transitioned over to Mount Carmel and El Pomar.
Well, my transition was quick. I mean, there really wasn't a transition if you really think about it. I retired on 21 June 2007, and on 22 June, wearing a suit and a tie, and I'm working at El Pomar.
That was the hardest part about transitioning for me, was putting on a suit and a tie.
Well, exactly. You know? That's still my challenge to this day. 14 years later, I'm still challenged. You know? I stress over what to wear.
That's the hardest part of the day.
I didn't have to worry about
that. No, O.D. Green.
The Army, you know?
So talk about a little bit about El Pomar and what the mission is there. What are you trying to
accomplish? Well, you know, El Pomar is a private philanthropic foundation here in Colorado Springs, founded by Spencer Penrose, Julian Spencer Penrose, who have a long legacy here in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. You know, they built the Broadmoor Hotel, the zoo, and other things here. And You know, the mission of the foundation is to enrich the lives of the citizens of the state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
That's our primary mission. And we do that through grant making.
Mm-hmm.
And the military is a huge component of the citizenry here in the Pikes Peak region.
Sure.
You know, we got 5 military installations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our service members live in the community. They're part of the community.
Yeah.
So we see them as citizens
and
of the community.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge part of the community. We're talking with Fort Carson.
With Fort Carson, Peterson,
Shriver, Air Force Academy. I mean, it's
absolutely.
And all the services, people that, contractors that support them.
Right? That's right.
That are right.
That's
here
right.
As well. Make it a large part.
And now all 6 branches of the services are represented right here in Colorado Springs.
And Space Command.
Yep, Space Force. Yeah,
Space Force. I'm trying to get it rounded.
The Guardians.
The Guardians, yes.
The Guardians of the frontier.
We were just talking to Mayor Sellers about that last week. So the guys, and now they started show up all these, I don't know if you saw the news, all these UFOs are...
Well, yeah. Now they're starting to pull out all the old footage, you know, the UFO sightings, you know.
Yeah, so I guess we got Guardians to guard.
That's right.
To make sure they have a landing spot for us. A little bit about, you know, what specifically is going on with El Pomar and some of the grants that you're making to the military community?
Well, you know, we make grants in a variety of ways mm-hmm. That really support the military. So, you know, like... we fund Mount Carmel so that they could provide the services to the veteran population.
Sure.
We make other grants, you know, to support the military families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we provide them with opportunities to take advantage of what's going on in the community without having to worry about the cost
mm-hmm.
of going to those various activities. We also support the military in those unmet needs that the government won't necessarily fund.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you look at a lot of the monuments and stuff, like at Fort Carson, for example, you know, those monuments was provided by grant dollars from El Pomar.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I didn't know
such.
That.
Yes.
Because I'm always going over there and not just necessarily look at them, but they make great backgrounds for videos I shoot.
Good backdrops.
Yeah, backdrop. I'm always over there trying to get to the helicopters or some of the things that are over
and see,
there.
Most people don't realize, you know, that, you know, for the military, they can't appropriate, use appropriated funds for those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes the community, you know, to come together and provide that.
And can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know when I was working in the military after I served.
Uh-huh.
So I started working with Morale, Welfare, and Recreation.
MWR.
And we started called it soldier dollars because you're right, the appropriated fund dollars can't support some of the things that go on installation. But if that soldier spends the money on the installation, now it turns into a wash dollar.
Exactly.
Right. So can you talk about do you use that kind of wash dollar with El Pomar's money? And is that a way?
No, we try not to use that wash dollar with El Pomar money.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
I always thought it was fascinating how Boys and Girls Clubs, libraries get on the installation to
really
help our community, and that's over there. And so you mentioned Mount Carmel and what El Pomar has kind of helped them do over there. So what is, you know, how integrated is kind of El Pomar? Like, why is it so important to the southern part of our community that we have Mount Carmel having a partnership with El Pomar to provide some of those services?
Well, you know, Mount Carmel is an important organization,
mm-hmm.
Providing a valuable service, an unmet service,
mm-hmm.
if you will. The government will only provide so much.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have a huge, large veteran population in our community,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're about enriching the lives of the citizens within our community. And Mount Carmel is helping enrich the lives of our veterans so that they become productive citizens within our community.
Mm-hmm.
And providing them with those necessary services that they need. Behavioral health is a big one.
Sure.
It's a major component.
Mm-hmm.
For the military's perspective, saying you have a behavioral health or a mental health issue is taboo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's taboo. And therefore, I'm not going to seek help. But Mount Carmel provides that confidential, comfortable environment
mm-hmm.
to where the veterans prefer to seek help, knowing that it stays there, but they're going to get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very valuable versus going to the VA.
Right.
Or versus going to behavioral health on the installation. They know it's going to be reported on up. And it has secondary effects,
mm-hmm.
second and third order effects. You know, it could be a career ender for our active duty population.
Sure.
If you've got a mental health issue, you could lose your security clearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge challenge.
It's a major challenge, yeah. And it's a stigma.
Right.
You know, it's a stigma that we have associated with mental health.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that in the kind of warfighter mode where commanders are looking at A blocks, right, you know, I'm an A block being I'm deployable, and as soon as you hit a amber or red block and you're not a non-deployable status, do you think that plays into the kind of stigma around?
Oh, yeah, that plays heavily in the stigma around it.
Mm-hmm.
Plays heavily. I mean, every command wants to ensure that they're 100% deployable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They want to have that 100% deployable OR rating.
Right.
Operational readiness rating. And if you have soldiers, per se, you know, that are non-deployable because of mental health, then that negatively impacts on the commander
mm-hmm.
because he's not able to deploy when the Army needs him to deploy.
And do you think they're, you know, with that, what's the Army doing or looking at to try to shift some of those?
Well, right, the Army is saying, you know, that, I mean, basically all the services are basically mm-hmm. saying, you know, that we recognize mental health.
Mm-hmm.
is an issue. During the Vietnam era, what did we call it? Shell shot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you shell shot. Just suck it up and drive on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's what you was told. Now we're starting to recognize it. However, the system itself still puts roadblocks in the way
mm-hmm.
and is frowned upon to where it's a career ender.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we still have a long ways to go to change that culture, that mental mindset, that it's okay to come forward and say, I think I have a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I need a little help.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Terrence McWilliams, Senior Vice President of Military Affairs, El Pomar Foundation and Board of Managers, Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Kind of shifting gears a little bit, you were the civilian assistant to the Secretary of the Army.
Yeah, I was appointed about in October 2009. I was appointed by the Secretary of the Army as the civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army for Southern Colorado.
Wow, and that really, you know, in that role, how does that kind of dovetail to what you're doing now?
In that role, you know, I assist the big Army.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I assist the Secretary of the Army in supporting his initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big initiative right now is recruiting. So telling the Army story into the community.
Well, recruiting always seems to be it.
Recruiting is always an issue, especially, you know, since we've been an all-volunteer force.
Right, yeah.
You know, how do you convince someone, you know, to join the military?
And re-up
and stay in the military. But believe it or not, we're successful right now.
That's great.
And a lot of that, the economy is what drives that.
Mm-hmm.
But I assist them in those areas, but also, you know, I work on other issues that the chain of command necessarily cannot work on because they're on active duty,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's a political issue or whatever. But mainly, you know, just advocate to the community and educate on the importance of the military and the value mm-hmm. of the military in their community.
And you're a great stalwart in the Colorado Springs community. You know, I every time I go to a function or something, I said, man, Sergeant Major's always showing up.
Well, I'm a people's person, you know?
You're out there. I'm going to give you that. Every time I look around, there you are. But showing up well because, you know, you are out there. When you look at some, you know, a lot of times I'll see African Americans or Hispanics not really seeing the service benefit of their service. You know, when I served and I was in combat, you know, we had everybody.
That's right.
But then when I look at some of the commercials that are on television, I don't see the representation of that. How are you, or are you even looking into how we service that part of the population in Southern Colorado?
Oh, well, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that.
Yeah.
If you look at the mainstream channels, I mean, our major prime networks,
mm-hmm.
You won't see too many recruiting advertisements on those channels.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out how to reach this generation. And we reach this generation via social media
mm-hmm.
and a lot of your cable channels.
Are you doing TikTok video?
We also got TikTok videos.
Are you on the TikTok
video? I'm not on the TikTok video. Not me personally.
I want to see you do a TikTok.
I'm not on the TikTok video. My grandkids say, come on, Grandpa, let's do TikTok. No, I'm not on TikTok, you know. But we're reaching out to them on the cable channels and social mm-hmm. media and those platforms. And I got to tell you, our new commercials are very representative,
mm-hmm.
very diverse. As a matter of fact, you probably heard, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Senator Ted Cruz bashing the Army,
mm-hmm.
comparing us to Russia,
mm-hmm.
masculinity, because we got an animated commercial, which is our newest one, that's representing five different soldiers on why they serve, different ethnic groups. And, of course, one of them is a female soldier who talks about she was raised by two moms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ted Cruz, you know, is mocking the Army over that and comparing.
Well, when you pick up a rifle.
Exactly.
And you in a foxhole.
You don't care.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But our advertisement is being successful.
Yeah.
This generation is drawn to it. And I tell you, they're signing up.
That's amazing.
They're volunteering
awesome.
To serve.
That's great because we are all volunteer Army. Have we covered everything? Do we miss anything that you want to get out?
Well, I think you probably covered it. I just got to say, you know, that this is a tremendous community. When you look at
mm-hmm.
the front range, you know, up and down the front range and our huge veteran population. And I will tell you, our veteran population is growing. And it's growing because we got service members who are leaving the military from other duty locations
mm-hmm.
and are relocating here to this region.
Yes.
Because of the support that we have here to support our veteran population and their families.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with Terrence McWilliams, Senior Vice President of Military Affairs, El Pomar Foundation, and Board Managers for Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, yeah, and I'm waiting to look for you on TikTok video. All right, everybody, we'll be back with more Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Stay tuned for more valuable information on Tactical Advantage on KPPM.
In today's tough economic times, it can be hard to make sure you're working with companies that have your best interest at heart. Because of this, you can count on the Wire Nut to go the extra mile to make sure that you and your investments are protected. You can trust the Wire Nut for licensed HVAC technicians, master electricians, and plumbers. The Wire Nut is your complete home service company. They strive to make sure you are comfortable in your home and that your home is safe. Call the Wire Nut Home Services at 719-465-5902. Online at thewirenut.com. Proud sponsor sponsor of the Tactical Advantage.
Now, back to Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Well, that does it, everybody. Another show in the can. Make sure you are spreading the word and sharing with your neighbors about the great information you are learning on the Tactical Advantage. We are here every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. on KPPF Radio, 95.7 FM, 1040 AM, and 98.5 FM, or stream online at kppfradio.com. A great big thanks to all of our guests for sharing their wisdom with us. And follow me throughout the week and get all of my social media handles on johnregister.com. Remember, when truth outweighs fear, we will commit to a courageous life. My name is John Register. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next week on Tactical Advantage. Go forth, inspire your world. Bye for now.
This has been Tactical Advantage with John Register, heard every Saturday at 8 a.m. on KPPF, presented by Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center in partnership with Medicare Mentors, Wirenut Home Services, and Star Dental Institute. Listen to the companion podcast on kppfradio.podbean.com.